please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 646. I am Lisa Sheps. I'm joined by my inimitable co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live on Wednesdays and Wednesdays only, just kidding, every day, at KOOP.org. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and rage.
More blue, more beer, more light, color and light. There's only color and light, yellow and white, just blue and yellow and white.
It is Wednesday, December 8th, 2021. On the show today, we have Penfold Theater and their radio play of Miracle on 34th Street. And Austin Playhouse will be here talking about their holiday comedies for grown-ups. And of course, Nicole and I will have lively discussions of World of Theater in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and the entire tri-state region. Stick with us.
George is very special. Maybe I am just not special enough for him. If my legs were longer.
Maybe I'm just not special enough for him.
Bernadette, you are special enough.
Well, that was...
I like that moment, and people don't play that a lot. I thank you for playing that, Lisa.
Well, I'm going to say you're welcome, but that is my least favorite Sondheim show.
I know. I'm surprised you played that too, but it's really a great moment in the show.
Well, I played it because they're talking about light. And tonight, mm-hmm. across the theater, in the world, really, I think London is doing it as well. They're dimming the lights at 6:30 Eastern Time for Mr. Stephen Sondheim.
That's phenomenal.
And I'm
well deserved.
Pardon me?
Well deserved.
Yeah. I mean, I think if he works on it, even posthumously, he may get somewhere.
Might, right?
Yeah, he's just got to work really, really hard. And you know what? Well, never mind. I was going to do a terrible joke about composers.
But you opted not.
Well, I'll do it for a different composer. What is Beethoven doing right now? Decomposing.
Yo.
Ba-dum-bum. But I could not do that for Esteban. Sorry.
Well, I did Rolling Over because Beethoven, Roll Over Beethoven.
Oh, Roll Over Beethoven. That's a good one. He probably.
Yeah, we're
is.
Really just niching. This is why we don't do comedy.
This is true. This is why we do radio. Hey, we had a couple of openings this week. Opening on December 5th. So what was that? What day of the week was that? I don't know. Is Mrs. Doubtfire. Did you?
That would have been Sunday.
Sunday. Mrs. Doubtfire, which one questions why they even wanted to do this. It's a terribly dated, and it's not quite, dare I say, PC to begin with. And it got mostly mixed reviews. Did you read any of them?
I saw some of it. I saw there was a lot of photos. They kept blasting the photos. Look at the photos. I'm like, well, where's the content? Which is interesting. And I do love looking at photos from shows, but I just found it very interesting that the show that's all they were giving me.
That's funny. I did not see any photos. I just saw the photo that was.
I felt like I had a barrage of them. I was like, woof.
Well, I mean, I guess because I just go to the reviews themselves, and it's the photos that are in the reviews I see. But anyway.
Ah. that makes sense.
Yep. It was reviewed by Maya Phillips of the New York Times, amongst others. In our Did They Like It, three of them liked it. 11 of them were middle of the road, and 6 of them did not like it. So let's start with the did not likes, which was the New York Times. They're not crazy. So this is a new musical based on the movie that Robin Williams in about called Mrs. Doubtfire. This is music.
There was one Latifah Taramina.
I beg your pardon?
Latifah was in that movie.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Latifah Taramina.
There you go.
She was grandma.
Okay. Awesome. I knew I liked it for a reason. Anyway, this one has music and lyrics by Wayne and Carrie Kirkpatrick. Those are the same people that did, oh my God, I just lost the name of it. Something Rotten.
Oh, I'm like, why are their names familiar?
Yeah, they did.
Talking about how clever that musical is the other day.
Yeah,
that's
but
really,
but I believe
not here.
Yeah, but I believe this is the opposite of that.
Yeah.
So the book was by Carrie Kirkpatrick and John O'Farrell. So and then the very talented Rob McClure performed as Mrs. Doubtfire.
We saw him in Something Rotten. No, we didn't. Did we?
We saw him in something. I don't remember what it was.
I think it was Something
Maybe
Rotten.
It was Something Rotten.
And we interviewed him backstage in his dressing room.
We did interview him. That's true. Mm-hmm. This was directed by, not Something Rotten, but Mrs. Doubtfire was directed by Jerry Zaks. And
I mean, that's a big name.
It is a big name. It's filled with big names. They called it, Maya Phillips called this an ambivalent production, trying to have it both ways. And I don't know what she means by that. Oh, the story of a playful, quote, trying to have it both ways, the story of a playful man-child with whom we empathize, but whose good intentions can't excuse his machinations. And she said that Mr. McClure's performance was more irritating than entertaining.
Oh, well, that's not good in the first place. What does it mean?
But interestingly enough, we had two offstage and on the air interviewees here in the show, because also J. Harrison Gee was in it.
Oh yes, we do, and I got to wear.
You got to wear his kinky boots.
Kinky boots, yeah.
And we have a lovely photograph of you to doing that. So this is, if folks remember the movie, the character's gay brother dresses him up in drag, dresses him up as Mrs. Doubtfire, so that he can fool his ex-wife into letting him see his children. The Frank is
into
played
being
by
the nanny. Yes.
What? I'm sorry. What?
Into being like a nanny, so
yes,
he can see his children.
Yeah. One would question the ethics behind that, but there you go.
Yeah, so bizarre in the first place.
So Frank is played by Brad Oscar, and J. Harrison Gee plays his brother-in-law, his Frank's husband.
Oh. I love it. I love him. He's talented.
He is very talented.
I really want to see him in a lot more.
Yeah, me too. Well, he's been pretty visible during the pandemic.
Oh, I know he has. I'm just saying, I still want to keep seeing him in a lot more.
Yeah. Well, let's keep talking about Mrs. Doubtfire. So Maya Phillips ends her review by saying, quote, while Mrs. Doubtfire movie may now be understandably considered transphobic, it is funny and likable and, most important, confident in what it is. Its musical counterpart feels unsure of what notes to hit, what jokes to rewrite, and what updates add to be relevant. The production wants the audience to both like and be skeptical of its straight male protagonist and includes gay characters but doesn't fully embrace them. A man in drag? Come on. It's 2021. That's just another night in the city. So, it's, you know, the show is just...
They didn't get the... Yeah, they... But, you know, not everything translates. And then
no, and it's, the show's problematic.
Content like this, that makes it even, I think, more prickly or well, why? I don't know.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree. So other reviews, Deadline's Greg Evans says, all the directorial panache Zach brings to this lightning-paced production, all the charm displayed by McClure, and all the energy contributed by a tireless ensemble can't disguise the obvious, dot, dot, dot.
I like it. I like a good ellipses. I'm all about a dot, dot, dot. So.
You know, me too. Charles Isherwood said, yes, it's quite often funny, but it shares a fundamental problem with most similar shows. The movie was chosen for adaptation because it was a hit and superbly executed, which makes it virtually impossible to equal, let alone surpass on stage. And somebody who's liking it, Anne Zambrana from Did They Like It, said, Mrs. Doubtfire is full of exciting, justifiably large musical numbers and charming comedic performances. And finally, Adam Feldman from Time Out said, Mrs. Doubtfire sustains a mild simmer that sometimes boils up.
Mild simmer. I like that.
Good. I'm going to read it again. Mrs. Doubtfire sustains a mild simmer that sometimes boils up into actual comedy. Voila. So that's Mrs. Doubtfire. Yeah. So
sometimes we do actual comedy.
Yeah. So remember, that was supposed to open right before the pandemic. And so it's been sitting.
Yes.
I think they were in performances, weren't they?
I think they had sort of previews.
Yeah, that's performances. That's what I meant.
I think they only had like maybe a week under their belt. Not a lot.
Yeah. So did you happen to see Annie live?
I didn't watch all of it, but I did pepper around and scatter. I have a lot of thoughts.
Well, let's hear a couple of them.
The criminal of that entire production was Harry Connick's bald cap.
I think he shaved his head.
That I have to start off with. And he drove me nuts.
I think he shaved his head. I think I saw him on a talk show.
No, he didn't shave his head. That was a ball cap. There was some protrusion growing in the back of it. And that was the evil in the show.
Interesting.
The Annie and all the orphans were so spectacular. I could have just had them on there the whole time. Megan Hilty and Titus, I just adored and had a great time with. And Megan should have been Miss Hannigan. And there you go. That's what I have to say. Oh, and Nicole is Grace. I enjoyed Nicole a lot. I was surprised to see Herbert Hoover made a cut, and they didn't take it out. That gets cut in everything.
No, they did. They did pretty much the whole thing, and they even added the.
We Got Annie.
Yeah.
So as a tribute to Anne Rankin, and did the choreography, which I think Nicole did a good job.
I haven't seen it. I saw the first 10 minutes and then fell asleep.
Harry was painful. It was making me sad.
Okay, I did see him. I did not notice the bald cap, but I assume that you are correct. And
the orphans and Annie Celine, is that the girl who plays Annie? Oh, wait, she's talented. And the rest of them, all of them stole the show. They were so talented.
Really? You liked little Molly?
I enjoyed all of them.
Oh,
I really did.
Yeah. I was a little underwhelmed overall, but I have not seen the whole thing yet, so I'm going to wait and see.
Yeah.
Evidently, the We've Got Annie is really, really good, as you said. And also, the NYC number is supposed to be pretty spectacular.
Yes, that was good. I have it saved, so I've watched a little bit. I watched a little bit live and then went back, and then I watched a little on DVR, so I have more to watch. But I appreciated that they built it like a set.
They did.
Like
they
a
did
theater
indeed.
Stage.
With
I'm
a
sorry,
small
they
audience.
They were on a set. But they built it like a theater stage and had actual scene changes. And set. I appreciated that aspect of it.
Agreed. So this was directed by Lear Debussonet. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. As well as Alex Rudinsky. And choreography was by Sergio Trujillo, who does like a zillion Broadway shows.
It does everything, almost.
Yep. And it was a pretty straightforward production. I mean, there was nothing other than adding the the number from the movie. We got Annie. It was a relatively, there were no major bells or whistles. They didn't change really the story. It was just as if you would do it if you bought the rights and did it in your theater.
Correct.
Yeah. So I did not read any of the reviews, and I don't know what the critics thought of it, but it looked charming.
So, you know, my grandmother can't travel at 97. She can't travel to New York to see Broadway anymore, and it's her biggest thing she misses in life. She said it felt like having theater in her living room again, and she loved it. She had some strong opinions, didn't like everything in it, but she just thought that was absolutely spectacular and the greatest thing ever. And just to hear someone so excited, that made me happy.
Awesome. Which was the whole point, was to make Nicole
exactly
happy.
It was Mabel. It was about making my 97-year-old grandmother happy.
So one more story I want to talk about before we go to break is this was in businessinsider.com. And I said, we asked Broadway workers which audience habits annoy them the most. And I think it's interesting. And I'm going to go through the eight that they talked about. One was don't talk during a performance. And I must say that ethic is kind of going away, generally speaking. A lot of theaters are going more towards let the audience experience theater the way they experience theater. And sometimes that includes talking.
Yeah, no.
I have to say that me personally, I like it the old way, but I'm a boomer. I'm an old person. Here's one that I liked.
Yeah, but I can't hear what's going on stage.
I'm with you.
The first people around me are having a conversation.
I think it's more, I don't like conversations, but I mean, somehow, if the spirit moves you to speak, you know, very much like people talk to the movie screen sometimes. I don't know. This one also says.
So you mean like having inspiration, like the spirit moved you?
Yeah, I don't think people should be having conversations and talking about where they're going to go to coffee after the show.
That I understand. I thought you meant like you and I were like, oh my gosh, that skirt is awful. And then we full on had a conversation.
Don't do that.
Okay. Yeah, no.
They also say that cell phones should be completely turned off. And I agree with this one. Although, more and more, I was just at a show last night where there was no program. Your program was on your phone. So if you want to see a program during the show, you have to have your phone on.
Which is interesting now because I was just having this conversation with making, programs using QR codes and making them digital. Are you of the old school where sometimes I see someone and I want to whip out the playbill in the middle of the show and look at the bio?
I always do.
Yeah, exactly. So now you have all these phones going off. Yeah. That's no bueno.
Well, I don't know. It depends. I guess it depends on how it's done. We don't really have time to go to the rest of them, so we're just going to let people see. You can see it at offstageonair.com. You can see the rest. It's too bad. I really want to talk about them. So the last thing I'll talk about is West Side Story, which is supposed to be amazing. It opens Friday here in theaters. The reviews are already out. They're pretty much spectacular. There's an article in the New York.
It looks spectacular.
It really does. The New York Times has an article about how it's going to surpass Oscar, blah, 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 and how it could possibly surpass the first one. And it's a very interesting article. It's called How West Side Story Could Make Even More Oscar History. And it's written by Kyle Buchanan. And there will be a link at offstageonair.com. And you sent me an email that I want to, or not an email. Yeah, it was an email, but a link that I want to go away with on. This is and I guess, you know, I'm always a little late. This is Hanukkah's over, but this is West Side Story Hanukkah. Here it is.
Okay.
Bum, 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 bum. Bum, bum, bum.
Candles were lighting on Hanukkah.
Blessings reciting on Hanukkah.
Fried foods were biting on Hanukkah.
Well, we are thrilled to have in our Zoom room actually two plays at once. And it is Austin Playhouse. They're two Christmas offerings. And we have Laura Haddock, who is the producing artistic director of Austin Playhouse and also the star of 12 Dates of Christmas, and the inimitable Bernadette Nason, who is performing Stealing Baby's Jesus, which is her own thing. And of course, Nicole Shiro's here. I didn't even say hello to you.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Laura and Bernadette.
Hello.
So, of course, our listeners know that we record these things on Zoom. And Bernadette, I keep wanting to call you the name that's on your Zoom name, which is not you.
No, my computer had a malfunction 15 minutes ago, and I've not been able to get it running again. So I've been racing around, which is why my face is bright red, getting set up on John Payne's computer.
Yes, John Payne. So, Laura, tell us about this project in general.
Sure. So we, as everyone knows, haven't been doing live theater for a few months for a big, very good reason. But like many other folks, we're returning to live theater now. And but we did want to do it as safely as possible and kind of, you know, ramp up to it. So we're doing these two one-woman shows and that are both holiday themed, but they're holiday comedies for grown-ups. We also, which means there's probably a little swearing. At least I know there is in 12 Dates, and I'm not sure what we're stayed in Stealing Baby Jesus as well. And so they're great nights out for adults. And and we're performing them at Trinity Street Playhouse because we've given up our space down at ACC Highland right now. And this is a lovely, lovely little black box theater that I wasn't that familiar with. That's in kind of the heart of downtown Austin. So we're really delighted to be here.
Trinity Street Theater is a beautiful little theater. I really enjoy going there. I do. Mm-hmm. Bernadette Nason, tell us about Stealing Baby Jesus. You just, didn't y'all do a production of this just recently?
Oh, no, actually, you will remember that I published the book last year.
That's right.
And this year I published the audio book of that. So I feel like a bit of a hypocrite, but these are four stories that the very first four stories that I ever wrote back in 2015. And it was as a result of getting an article from my sister saying that my hometown of Winchester was going for the title, the most Christmassy town in the UK. And I thought, what? No way. And as soon as that, my head flooded with memories, and that's what happens with memoirists. And I wrote four stories, one about each country that I've lived in. And so this is a sort of rewritten version, touched up, made better version of the 2015 show that did so well.
Well, so I'm wondering if you have Winchester Cathedral as part of the music.
I don't, because I probably have to get some sort of rights for it. I've tried to make sure that I haven't asked for anything. I did want to have Andy Williams, It's the Most Time of the Year, because as you probably know, I don't believe that's true. And but that would have cost us money. So
yep.
No, but Winchester Cathedral is mentioned.
Oh, lovely. well, that is great. And we know you very well as a storyteller. And when you, I'm just curious, when you perform these stories, is it the same thing every night, or do you take some leeway every night?
Well, it's supposed to be the same thing every night. But that's one of the amazing dualities with storytellers and actors, is that our inclination is always to improv. And when the audience says or does something, you immediately want to go in and start participating with that. That's what storytellers do. But actors learn the lines. And we try to learn the lines. So I'm trying to make sure that I'm fairly pure with it. However, having said that, I've been given carte blanche by Ben Wolf, my director, to play with the audience. I just need to make sure I don't miss any sound cues, light cues, or wander so far from the subject I spend 2 hours on it instead of an hour and 10 minutes.
Wonderful. So you mentioned that Ben Wolf is your director, with the incomparable Mr. Ben Wolf.
Yes,
and is there anybody else in your show that you want to highlight and talk about?
Well, of course, I'd want to say thank you to Laura, because I really love these opportunities. And I'm very, very and eagerly anticipating seeing 12 Dates as well. But Robert Fisher did the sound for it, and Mark Novick did the lights for it. And Andrew Hatcher is our stage manager. So it's a little team, and it's the same team that's working with Lara on hers.
That was going to be the next question. Let's switch to 12 Dates. Lara, who is performing in this piece?
Well, Lisa, let me check. Oh, it's me. I read this this script when we were looking at a lot of different plays I read throughout the year, and I really loved it. I thought it was just very funny. Gina Hoban, who wrote it really in response when she realized that there were so many great classic leading roles in holiday shows for men and not that many for women, and certainly not that many for women in, kind of the 30s, 40s age range. And so she just wrote this incredibly fun play. And I loved it. And I sent it immediately to Cindy to see, what she thought. And she's like, I loved it. I would love to work with you on this. And so Cindy is directing it.
And that is Cindy Williams.
Yeah. So it's been a lot. I haven't been on stage since the Philadelphia story about 6 years ago. And anyway, it's been a lot to jump into, but a lot of fun. And mainly because the team, as Bernadette mentioned, that we have working with us on this are just fantastic. And I think the same way actors have been really wanting to get back on stage, the technicians have also been really wanting to work on their craft as well, the designers. So great. Mark Novick, our lighting designer, pulled 30 lights out of our storage for the Playhouse and brought them to the Trinity space. And this whole, I had thought of it would be a very simple, just gonna lights up, lights down. We were just telling some stories. He's creating these incredible looks in this small space. And I think I don't know what Stealing Baby Jesus is doing, but I think 12 Dates has like 200 light cues in it.
My.
Yeah, I must say that I was fairly stunned by Mark's work. I thought lights up, lights down, and then I've got spotlights. I mean, I've got all sorts of stuff. So it's very exciting.
That's wonderful. I'm going to put you on the spot because we didn't talk about this ahead of time. Do either of you want to do a little piece from either of your pieces?
I've actually, because Lara always tells me to be prepared for these things, I did prepare a very small piece. There are four stories, and there's one from England, one from Libya, one from the United Arab Emirates, and one from America. And I chose my favorite one from America, from the book, because this is the one that everyone really seemed to resonate with. And it's about making a cake. And if anyone's ever made a rich fruit cake, this will resonate with them.
Well, great. This is Bernadette Dason doing a piece from Stealing Baby Jesus.
At last, I was ready to do some actual mixing. First thing in the process, butter and soft brown sugar. I'd already taken the butter out of the fridge. Thank you, I'm not an idiot. So it was soft. But rather than use the open packet of soft brown sugar, I decided as a cost-saving measure to use up the supply in my pantry, which had been there for some time. So this soft brown sugar was not soft. It was the opposite of soft. It was hard and lumpy like a big brown rock. I went to my computer to look this up. Surely there was a way to loosen lumpy soft brown sugar. There was. I wrote it down. But before heading back to the kitchen, I checked my email and went on Facebook to tell everyone about my cake-making adventure. I posted a photo I'd taken earlier of the ingredients looking all pretty on the counter. I had to tear myself away from the pretty picture to return to the real-life scene. The online dehardification process involved warm, damp, washcloths and the microwave. Slowly but surely, I partially de-lumpified this ancient sugar. Time was ticking by, though. I didn't want to waste my whole evening, so plowing on, I added the brown sugar pebbles to the butter.
That answers two questions. A, wonderful show, makes me want to see more. And two, I've often wondered how to do the brown sugar thing.
Well, don't do it my way. It's now, downhill from there, Lisa.
My way usually involves a hammer and a food processor.
Well, mine actually ended up involving a pestle and mortar.
Well,
so
same.
We're not far off.
We are not. And Laura, did you find something?
Yeah, I'm just gonna. This is how the show starts. So this is our kickoff to it and sets everything up.
Great. Well, this is Laura Haddock doing a piece from the 12 Dates of Christmas.
I used to love the holidays. I used to love Christmas. I used to be that annoying girl in the jingle bell earrings and the leopard print Santa hat. That was me. And even more than Christmas, I loved Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving had always been a big deal at my house. Now, I realize there aren't that many people who actively dislike the holiday. And when I hear tell of one, I instantly lose trust in them. I mean, who doesn't love a holiday that focuses on food? That said, I figure there are also not that many people who rate it the number one holiday like we do with our weeks of anticipation and menu planning. I'd like to say that my family's love of Thanksgiving goes beyond the turkey and the parade of carbohydrates that follow it, that we take time throughout the day to touch each other on the arms, like in the Folgers commercial, and express how thankful we are for one another, for our health, our jobs, the means by which we are able to enjoy this lavish meal. But no, we generally disregard the more sentimental aspects of the day in pursuit of the gravy dish before someone else gets our fair share. And for the rest of the day, we are lazy. It is just an all-around terrific day. Then, about a year ago, on Thanksgiving Day, my fiancé and I broke up. Every holiday since has sucked.
Well, there you go. I am a Thanksgiving lover. Thanksgiving and Passover. Those are my two. Anyway, before we sign off, I wanted to give Nicole, do you have anything you want to ask?
No, you asked it all. You were on it today.
I'm very thorough. Well, tell us about when we can see this. I understand there's an in-person option, and you're also going to have a streaming option.
Yeah. So 12 Dates of Christmas opens this Thursday, the 9th, and has 5 live performances, 9th, 10th, 15th, 18th, and 20th. And then Stealing Baby Jesus opens on the 11th and has 6 performances. And then both shows, we're recording them the first weekend and editing them, and then they will stream the 20th through the 26th. And
Will you ever do them back to back? So if I could come on Saturday and see them both on the same night?
We don't have that scheduled right now, but if we start selling out performances, we might add a 12 dates on Friday the 17th. That would be
I certainly hope that is the issue. Yes. Selling out is always a good problem to have. Well, where can folks go to get information about the show?
Sure. It is austinplayhouse.com.
Awesome. Well, it has been a pleasure to have you on. I love doing Christmas, not Christmas shows. I love the idea of grown-up Christmas.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you both.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for having us.
What's wrong with the grown-ups? Won't somebody say? Why are they so difficult today?
Hi, I'm George Takei. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby.
Perfecto.
Now, what does Hornsby mean?
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and...
Nicole!
Oh, my gosh. So there's an abrupt change from our song to our ID from George Takei, and that's because of operator error.
Can I just ask you, now, what is Hornsby?
Oh my. So we just have a few more minutes to talk about a few things, and I do want to say that Harry Potter and the Cursed Child opened again, and typically they haven't been re-reviewing the shows that reopen, but they reviewed this one because, if you remember, it used to be 2 shows at like 5 hours, and now it's 1 show at I think just over 2 hours.
Exactly.
Yes.
I was about to say, I think the review is because it's a condensed show.
Correct. It is a different show, but the review, without going into details, was very complimentary, and so it is still good, they say.
those people.
The people like them.
And guess what else started performances last night?
Tell me, Lisa, tell me.
MJ the Musical.
Boy, this one's had a long journey getting there.
I think it's still going on.
Yeah, I know.
I think it's going to continue being a long journey. So this, of course, is the Michael Jackson musical, which used to have a different name. And I'm trying to find, I didn't underline it, but it had a very problematic name because of his troubles. So they changed the name to MJ. This is produced by the Michael Jackson estate and has attached to it as a writer Lynn Nottage, amongst other people.
Lynn's been everywhere lately.
True that. So this was capitalized at $22.5 million, and
not quite Spider-Man.
Not quite. No, I'm not sure that anybody's going to get to that point soon. Hope not. It is directed and choreographed, or directed by Christopher Wheeldon, who is a choreographer. It's got a super long built-in preview period. So it started previews last night, and it's going to continue through February 1st.
That's a hefty amount.
I think it is. I kind of have a problem with it because the whole thing...
That's like almost 2 whole months. I mean, right. What are you going to just do? You have 3 versions of the show. You just keep testing out different versions and then pick the one you like.
Yeah,
just weird.
To remind folks, previews, while you're in previews, you're allowed to change things on a daily basis and continue to change things. And the critics have a tacit agreement not to review the piece until it opens. So that's a long
opening.
You
technically can even start and stop shows also and fix things right on the spot.
Yep.
And that's not breaking a fourth wall or unheard of.
Yep. This show has 37 songs in it. And then not all of them are complete songs.
I mean, the man did have a catalog, so I'm not surprised.
Well, I'm not surprised at all either. But I'm kind of mixed about the... what was it? I forgot what show it was. It was a jukebox musical that had like a zillion songs in it, and they only did bits and pieces of each one. And that's, so I don't know how I feel about that, whether I'd rather hear a whole song from start.
Whole song.
Or
was it Motown that did that?
I think it was Motown, yeah.
I think it was.
And they had like 60. It was crazy.
Yeah, I think that is the one, Lisa, but yes.
Well, I want to have time.
I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll find out more.
We will.
The saga continues.
We will. Well, I want to have time for Today in Theater History, but I do want to tell our listeners that I went to Hyde Park Theater last night to see... oh, my God. I just lost the name.
I can see the images of the show, and I...
Anyway, it was, the show is called Strange But Perfect. I totally forgot the name of the producing organization, which is one I know.
Street Corner Arts.
Street Corner Arts. Thank you. And this was a lovely little play, and they are playing for 2 more weeks. So you can get information at streetcornerarts.org about that. It's a 90-minute, no intermission, and it's very, very fun. They have
tied up in a little bow.
Yes. They have decreased the seating in an already small house. So I think there was about 30 or 40 seats in there. So it has been selling out. So you might want to go if you are going to go. So let's do, because today in theater history is jam-packed. It's huge today.
Oh, well, let's get on it, because it's been some good stuff lately. You've pulled out the nice pieces. So Lisa, happened today in theater history?
I will tell you, but we're probably going to have to... abridge it, because there's just too much.
Abridge it, dear history.
I love that theme song. So this is the birthday of Lee J. Cobb. He was born in 1911, and he most notably did Mr. Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman. And in 1925, the year my father was born, this is the opening night of the Coconuts. That was written by George Kaufman and Irving Berlin and is done by the Marx Brothers.
Okay, I'm like, why do I know the coconut?
And it has, among other things, it's got so many famous scenes in it, but the one is the Wyandotte scene,
mm-hmm.
And it's really between Groucho and Chico, and it's well worth seeing. So
you love the Marx Brothers.
I do love the Marx Brothers, and what was mm-hmm. great about them is they started out in Broadway, and then they moved to film. So that's rather great. Than the Coconuts film turning into a Broadway musical, it was the other way around.
Yeah.
Also in 1925, it's the birthday of Sammy Davis Jr., part of the Rat Pack.
Oh, he's been on my mind a lot lately, too. How ironic.
There you go. And Cole Porter scandalized Broadway today from the show called The New Yorkers. And this was a song called...
Well, New Yorkers are scandalous.
That's true. This is a song called Love for Sale about, you know, people that sell love.
Love.
And Jimmy Durante was in the cast.
Jimmy Durante. Jim, I was going to do it, but I didn't. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I'm skipping a whole bunch of wonderful things, but this was also the opening night of the musical Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Oh.
Starring the inimitable Carol Channing. And
yeah.
One of the most famous songs for that is Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, also
exactly.
sung by Marilyn Monroe.
Exactly.
In 1991, I remember this didn't last very long, Nick and Nora opened at the Marquee Theater. It had a book by author Lawrence and a score by Charles Strauss and Richard Mulberry Jr. Joanna Gleason was in it, Barry Bostwick, Faith Prince. Closed after 9 performances.
Yeah, didn't do well.
Which is too bad. Nick and Nora, if there's anything that would work for a musical, it would be the Thin Man series.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure there was a dog in it, Asta.
I don't know. I bet you. Well, we can go to the Playbill Vault and find out.
Well, in 1996 in Toronto, Ontario, the world premiere of Ragtime. With book by Terrence McNally and score by Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty. Of course, it ended up going to Broadway and did quite
mm-hmm.
well. The favorite of many, many people.
Beautiful.
And in 1999, we got to go. Liza Minnelli opens Minnelli on Minnelli, and that's where I have to stop because we're running late. There's a lot.
All right.
There's a lot more stuff.
I'll check it out online.
So, yeah, you should. And I was going to play a little piece of music here, but I'm going to skip it in essence of time. And we're going to go straight to our interview with Penfold. Art thou ready?
I am ready.
Here
thou
it is.
Ready.
Here it is. Nicole, Hanukkah ended yesterday.
It did. Did you have a lovely 8 days?
I did. I had eight crazy nights.
Excellent.
But
and
you know,
we've moved on to another holiday.
Yeah, Santa Claus is coming to town.
It's very exciting.
Oh wait, I just thought of a song. Anyway, never mind. Well, you know who is always in the Christmas spirit every year is Penfold Theater Company, and they
are.
They have a repertoire of radio plays that they do during Christmas, and this year they're doing The Miracle on 34th Street. Which, as you know, is the sequel to The Miracle on 33rd Street.
33rd?
Toity-toid and toid. And we have with us several of the actors, and later on we're going to be joined by the director. And I'm just going to go through and introduce them in the order that they are on my Zoom screen. Lowell Bartholomew, welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Eva McQuaid, welcome.
Thank you.
And Marina Deo Pedroza, hello, welcome.
Hello.
Did I butcher your name?
It was good.
It was good, okay. And Robert Ferris, hello.
Welcome, thank you.
I need to apologize to our listening audience. My dog, who constantly is itching herself, makes a lot of noise. She's in the background. I'll try to mute whenever I can. Miracle on 34th Street. You know what? Everybody knows this story, but in case people don't, does one of you want to give us the rundown of the story?
There's a guy who says he's Santa Claus. He says he's the real Santa Claus, and he starts working at Macy's. And hilarity ensues.
Hilarity ensues. Yeah, right. I have to say, in all transparency, people must know that I worked as Christmas help at Macy's 34th Street back in the 70s. There you go. For 10 days, I was at Macy's.
A primo era for working at Macy's.
I was like, that was like, hey,
you were a Sedaris.
It was. I was. David Sedaris and I worked as elves together. That's not true. So tell us, this is a radio play. I'm presuming that many of you are, all of you play multiple roles. Let's just go through and see who you play. Lowell, who are you playing?
I play Chris Pringle and Chris Pringle.
Ah, so you are a single role.
I'm the only one who only has one part.
Oh, okay. And Eva?
My main role is Doris Walker, and I also play a mom and a kid and a secretary and a judge. And
do you play the kid? Because there's one. No. Everybody's shaking their head, which doesn't really work on radio.
No.
There you go. And Marina, who do you play? The kid?
I play the kid, Susan Walker. Also,
and she does it with aplomb.
I play a very moody secretary. I do a couple of moms. I play a couple of moms. And what else? A psychiatrist.
District attorney.
A district attorney, thank you. Very flustered district attorney.
Checked.
And a postman.
And Dr. Pierce.
My favorite is the postman.
Oh. He always rings twice.
The postman.
And Robert Ferris, who are you playing?
Well, I'm a total of 9 different roles.
Wow.
So I'm not going to name them all.
Now, give us your favorite.
My favorite is Drunk Santa. Which
yes,
I did some amazing research for.
Oh well, you would have to, because I know you subscribe to the method.
It's true. It's true.
It's really beautiful to watch, I have to say.
So
when he falls asleep at the microphone.
So I know that Penfold does this every year. They've been doing it for the past 5 or 6 years, and I'm assuming that many or all of you are veterans. Are any of you doing this for the first time? Oh my God!
Oh,
all
my
of
God,
you.
That's so exciting. Yeah.
And the only Michael Trejo is also in this, and then this is his first. Everybody's new to this.
Oh wow! Okay, awesome.
And,
so what do y'all?
Our director is the first. This is the first time the director has done this. Yes.
And who's the director? Do you know her personally, Robert?
I'm not sure. Her name escapes me right now, but
we haven't met yet. Actually,
it's the incomparable Rosalind Ferris. I will just say it right off the bat, and she's going to be joining us soon. So any of you can answer this. I know all of you as actors here in the local Austin theater community, but what's different about doing a radio play for you? Marina. Oh, sorry. Eva.
Well, I'm sorry. You said anybody could answer.
I did, but then nobody was answering right away, so I just jumped in.
I'm sorry, my middle name is anybody. I think the Foley is the most interesting and exciting aspect of it, for me at least. I was very intrigued by it when I first started hearing about radio plays. I didn't know it was a thing. My friend did one down in San Antonio, and then when I moved here to Austin, Penfold was doing some. And I think it's really cool. There's some really neat, creative ways on how to get some different sounds, and I just find that really
well, Eva,
cool.
I'm confused. I mean, when I hear Foley, I think of a department store in Houston in the 70s. What do you mean when you say Foley?
Not to take away from Macy's. But yes, but Foley is the sound effects basically that we're creating that are not created electronically, that we create with, like, for example, I think the one that the audience will probably see the most is footsteps happening. And we have a variety of shoes we use for different folks. And we use different types of shoes on either concrete if they're outside or a piece of wood if they're indoors. And yeah.
Do you know who's doing Foley for this show?
We all do.
Everybody.
Oh, okay. All the actors are doing Foley. Oh, how fun.
With the help of Buzz, who taught us all of the Foley arts. We appreciate Buzz.
The incomparable Buzz Moran.
Yes, wonderful. Yes, yeah, so the Foley is always the interesting part of these things. And I'd like to tell our audience that Rosalind Ferris, the director, has just joined us. Of course, we spoke about her earlier and said all these nasty things about her, but now that she's here, we have to be nice.
Yes, please behave.
Well, not something I don't think any in this group do well, but we'll try. Anybody else want to talk about just what's the experience of working as a radio actor versus a theater actor?
I think for me, one of the distinctive things has to do as much with the style of the work, which is this late 40s snappy patta, guys. And you're doing, when you sketch out a character with just a microphone, you put all of that energy into your voice and you try to capture that style. And that's a lot of fun. And I really love watching and listening to all the other actors jump back, you know, 80 years into that style of work.
So let me ask you all this, or anybody this. You're playing these characters, but does your actor have a character as well? Are you coming in as a character that is playing these characters?
Mine does. I've got this very, opulent look to my character with her coat. And so we keep teasing that, like, she's the one that is always playing all the kids and all the commercials, and she's very full of herself. So I might be embracing that a little bit on stage.
Wonderful. Sounds like typecasting for me. Rosalind, tell us about your approach to directing this. First of all, have you directed a radio play before? And if not, how did you approach this as a director?
I was very lucky in that my first experience working with radio play was immediately previous this. I was directing one of the readings Penfold had in their Great Plays and Great Spaces series. They had a series of readings of radio plays from the Harry Ransom Center archive. So that was my first time doing one. I did adaptation of Vanity Fair, which was very fun. And I got to work with Buzz on doing Foley for that, which was, yeah, tremendous fun. So that started to give me a feel for what that audience experience is of, like, there is something I think very magical in that we are creating a story which we hope whisks you away, but you're also, the audience gets to see how we're doing it. It is both the front of stage and behind the scenes look at the same time. And I think there's something very, like, it almost feels like you're sharing a secret with the audience in a very, like, a very warm way. And so I was very excited about that from jump. And I think that dovetails really nicely with this play because, there so much about the play is about, like, the joy and necessity of having an imagination. So it's very exciting for the means by which we're telling the story to dovetail so neatly with the story itself.
Well, wonderful. And I'll just, I'm just curious, and by a raise of hands, which doesn't really work on radio, I realize that, but I'm going to tell everybody what happened. Is everybody who's a big fan of this, of Miracle on 34th Street? Not everybody is.
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen it? Is that true?
Yep.
I've never seen it either.
I've never seen it.
Then I will say that I believe, Robert, you raised your hand and Nicole did.
I'm the old person here.
Yeah, stand in line. Yeah, it's interesting. Growing up Jewish in my household, we didn't really watch it. I don't think I saw it until I was an adult. But I enjoy it. And I believe there's been a remake or two of it as well on film. Well, wonderful. I have been to, I think I saw the other movie that Nicole does not like, which is the Jimmy Stewart, It's a Wonderful Life. I saw.
Not like it. I'm sorry, Rosalind. It drives me nuts.
Well, no, I don't know if Rosalind made that movie. I believe it was Frank Capra.
No, but Rosalind made a face of disgust. Like, what?
I was just surprised. Yeah. It feels like it's a hard movie to like get your hackles up at.
I'm lukewarm on it, but.
No, there are many people that they're like Frank Capra haters out there.
My brother hates that movie.
Yeah,
hates it.
Love it, love it. Y'all are all wrong. That those of you that hate it are wrong. Okay, so tell folks when this is happening. Anybody, Rosalind, can you give us the dates?
Yes, we open this Thursday at Old Settlers Association of Williamson County in Round Rock, and we run Thursday through Saturday this week, and then next week we are Thursday through Saturday in Round Rock, and then on Sunday, December 19th, we have two shows at the Driscoll Hotel in Austin, Texas.
Yay, la la la.
And that'll be the closing of our run.
Wonderful. Are there for the in-person, well, they're all in-person, what are the COVID-19 restrictions that you guys are exercising?
There is a chart on, if you visit the Penfold Theater website, they have a chart. It'll depend, our COVID restrictions depend on what code the city is in at a given time. So the actors will not be masked on stage, but I believe at level 3, the audience is asked to be masked. But I would check the website for that.
And I believe that is penfold.org, penfoldtheater.org. I just said that.
Yeah.
That's what I just said, everybody. Penfoldtheater.org. But if anybody else would like to repeat it, that's totally okay.
Since anybody was my middle name, penfoldtheater.org.
Excellent. Thank you, Eva. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. I wish I could see it. I'm doing my own show at the exact same time, so I'm not able. But I did want to listen.
Does it
get
have
back
a miracle in it, Lisa? That's what we want to know.
Pardon me?
What does it take place on?
It does. It's a miracle. It's up at all. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show. Have a great time. I'm jealous. One day I want to be an actor in one of these too.
It's fun.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you all for joining us today.
You bet. Good to see you all again.
My mommy says I'm a miracle. Well, look at my face and it's plain to see. Ever since the day Doc chopped the umbilical cord,